Last week, President Obama stood in front of the White House press corps explaining his thoughts on the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin verdict. He said he could have been Trayvon Martin 35 years ago, and that even he experienced being followed in a department store or seeing people clutch their purses when in an elevator with an African-American man. How far have we come in 150 years since the end of slavery? Will Americans continue to be fearful of others based on the color of their skin? Good morning. I'm Randy Mason of KCPT, in for Steve Kraske, and that is the topic of our conversation today. Joining us this hour are two columnists who have written extensively about race. Louis Duguid is a columnist for the Kansas City Star, and he joins us right here in our studios. Louis, welcome.
Good morning, and thanks for having me.
You bet. From the other side of the country, in fact, Clinton Yates is a columnist with the Washington Post, and he's going to be joining us this morning all the way from Washington, D.C. How are you, Clinton?
I'm good. It's afternoon here.
Ah, good point. East Coast time. And we are very glad to have you joining us here on a topic
that
I think is going to engage a lot of listeners before this hour is out. It's a pretty major thing that we want to hear from them about it. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Also, by email, as the conversation heats up here, you can get to us at updatedate@kcur.org. And at some point, we may listen a little bit to the president's remarks. But I'm curious, Clinton, especially, were you sort of surprised that the president chose to weigh in the way he did? It was an unscripted moment. He kind of came into the press room and really let people know what he was thinking.
Yeah, it was a bit surprising, but it was also very, how do I say this? It was somewhat exciting. I mean, the fact that he was able to speak about this without the remarks being prepared, and he had clearly thought about it quite a bit. But to me, it was very impressive that he decided to do this without a script and simply spoke off the top of his head, seemingly, because it's a very important topic, and it's clear that it's something he thought a lot about.
I don't think it was a surprise so much from my perspective and everything that I've seen President Obama do. It was just a matter of time before he would weigh in. It was something that only he could give voice to, and he alone, I think, in his unscripted comment, was able to crystallize for this whole huge section of America that really didn't understand the Trayvon Martin, just what the importance of this was to the African-American community.
Well, let's take a listen. We have actually excerpts here from the president's speech last week.
When Trayvon Martin was first shot, I said that this could have been my son. Another way of saying that is Trayvon Martin could have been me 35 years ago. And when you think about why, in the African-American community at least, there's a lot of pain around what happened here, I think it's important to recognize that the African-American community is looking at this issue through a set of experiences and a history that that doesn't go away. There are very few African-American men in this country who haven't had the experience of being followed when they were shopping in a department store. That includes me. There are very, very few African-American men who haven't had the experience of walking across the street and hearing the locks click on the doors of cars. That happens to me, at least before I was a senator. There are very few African-Americans who haven't had the experience of getting on an elevator and a woman clutching her purse nervously and holding her breath until she had a chance to get off. That happens often. And I don't want to exaggerate this, but those sets of experiences inform how the African-American community interprets what happened one night in Florida. And it's inescapable for people to bring those experiences to bear. The African-American community is also knowledgeable that there is a history of racial disparities in the application of our criminal laws. Everything from the death penalty to enforcement of our drug laws. And that ends up having an impact in terms of how people interpret the case. Now, this isn't to say that the African-American community is naive about the fact that African-American young men are disproportionately involved in the criminal justice system, that they're disproportionately both victims and perpetrators of violence. It's not to make excuses for that fact, although black folks do interpret the reasons for that in a historical context. They understand that some of the violence that takes place in poor black neighborhoods around the country is born out of a very violent past in this country, and that the poverty and dysfunction that we see in those communities can be traced to a very difficult history. And so the fact that sometimes that's unacknowledged adds to the frustration. And the fact that a lot of African-American boys are painted with a broad brush and the excuse is given, well, there are these statistics out there that show that African-American boys are more violent. Using that as an excuse to then see sons treated differently causes pain. I think the African-American community is also not naive in understanding that statistically, somebody like Trayvon Martin was probably statistically more likely to be shot by a peer than he was by somebody else. So folks understand the challenges that exist for African-American boys. But they get frustrated, I think, if they feel that there's no context for it, and that context is being denied. And that all contributes, I think, to a sense that if a white male teen was involved in the same kind of scenario, that from top to bottom, both the outcome and the aftermath might have been different.
And that was President Obama remarking last Friday on the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin verdict. Some applauded it. Others wondered if he was, you know, stepping away from his more pressing issues, maybe the economy, foreign relations, to do this. What do you think? 816-235-2888 to get in on the conversation. 816-235-2888. We're here at Up to Date with Louis Duguid from the Kansas City Star, Clinton Yates in Washington, D.C. Is it unpresidential to go into things like this, Louis?
I think it's essential that the president weighed in. He's the first African-American president in this country. He's the only one who could, on a national stage, give this voice. And he mentioned that when African-Americans' frustrations don't have an outlet, that we see things just blow up. We saw that in the 60s with the riots, mm-hmm. when the press largely ignored African-Americans, and there really weren't people in positions of authority and power who could speak to their concerns. And fortunately, we're not seeing that sort of outrage boil into the streets in unrest because people are being heard.
Clinton, you actually wrote a column about being out on the streets the night that the verdict was announced. Pretty emotional scene, though not erupting into violence.
Yeah, it was very sad. In fact, there were a lot of women who were, you know, mothers who seemed to be around the age of Trayvon's mom who were just looking with such sorrow at the screen. It just seemed like another scenario of injustice. And it's hard to really even console that feeling. I mean, you know, violence was never going to be the reply to this because it was such a violent situation in itself in terms of the case. But I did want to say to your point about something being unpresidential, I think that that's a little bit, and I'm not saying you're doing this, I mean, just in general, I think that's a little bit of a condescending context, I mean, comment, not your idea, rather, to say that it's unpresidential for the president to address something that he feels is very important. I think that if he's shifting the paradigm of what is presidential and what is not, that's fine. And in this case, I think him being very personal was doing exactly that, and I think it was necessary.
Well, and as Lewis said, no one has been in that position that could do it before. So
right.
For him not to step up might have been a great missed opportunity.
Then you would have outrage in the black community, because who else could do it but President Obama?
We do have callers stepping up to take part in this. I think we're going to start with, let's see, William from KCK. Are you there?
Yes, sir.
Join us on Up to Date.
I just wanted to say that, like, I was born and raised in Kansas City, Kansas. I'm Caucasian. I know, obviously, that the prejudices lean towards African American, but even myself as a youth from an inner city part of the city, as a white kid, got some of those experiences myself. My main point is, I'm an American. Trayvon Martin was an American. It's sad when life is lost for any reason whatsoever. For President Obama to say that the African American community is hurt by this, I think that separates that as an American. We're all Americans, and we all hurt when life is lost unnecessarily. I don't appreciate that, and I don't appreciate the major focus on this one case, not to take away how important it is when life is lost, but there's so many things wrong with our country right now to have this much media attention on one criminal case in one state.
If I may say, I think to that caller's point about so much attention on it and sort of one problem, I mean, you know, race relations affect almost every single part of our society in America. And to just say that the focus is just on this case, I think is a little bit too short-sighted, because obviously the entire spectrum of how we deal with each other racially is important, and that's what the president was talking about, in my opinion.
I think you also have to look at the history of this country when it comes to African Americans. If you go back to 1619 with the first African Americans landing in Virginia as slaves, first as indentured servants, and then, of course, as slaves. And that history being so steeped in degradation and exploitation and violence, that's what the president's talking about. And that's why people who are black in this country, representing 13% of the population, are saying that this is different. This is us. This is one of us who was treated in a horrible way, killed. And could this happen to other people like us?
Next up on Up to Date, Linister from Kansas City, Missouri. You're with us here.
Yes, I thought the president's comment was wonderful, and I about teared up when I heard it, because I was thinking of young men who would now feel included in the system because of what the president said and how he said it.
Would not feel included in the system?
Well, the young men would feel included because of the president's comment.
Right. We all want to be Americans, and that's really the bottom line. We want the constitutional guarantees. We want the opportunities. We want to be a part of this wonderful country. But in every walk of life, whether we're shopping or going into jobs or education, we see that we are treated differently. And then, of course, Trayvon Martin's death happens. And we see that, this can be an outcome for us, too. And it's why so many African-American parents have this conversation with their children about being so cautious when they're out.
Yeah, you wrote.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say
that conversation about being included, I think, is very important, because feeling like you're a part of what everybody buys into, that you can be a part of this country, too, and that you can do it. Sometimes it's not just about seeing a man of color in the Oval Office. It's about the things he actually says. And I think as more young people of color, and I don't just mean African Americans, I mean everybody, sees and hears what he has to say, you know, they'll feel like that caller said a little bit more included and a little bit more a part of something. And that's really what the goal is here. It's harmony and feeling like as Americans, we are all on the same level.
Thank you for your call, Linister. I just wanted to follow up with Lewis about the talk, because, you know, when you say that, just to someone who's not African American, I think it's almost shocking that you actually have to have that moment.
It is essential if you have children of color. And so many people in blended families now have children of color. It is essential that the parents sit down with the child and let them know that if stopped by the police or if stopped by a person in authority, for them to behave in a very civil, professional manner, to speak clearly, to not look as if there's anything sinister going on, to again fit in and be part of this country rather than be offended and become defensive, because that will only escalate the problem.
Clinton, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I mean, it's absolutely true. And I think one of the misnomers about the talk is that the only way that we can progress is by us as people of color to sort of understand what the harms are. But there's a talk that I feel that other people need to have. And I don't just mean whites. I mean everybody as a culture, which is that the reason why that talk is necessary is because of all of the prejudices that we all choose to bring to the table. You know, if you can teach your kid, hey, say hello to people on the street, even if you don't necessarily know them, you can choose to sort of try to unravel those unconscious biases that people have and people utilize all the time. And that's something that I think is a big, big hole in our racial relations, is trying to blame everything on one group or the other, and who needs to fix it being just sort of a one-sided affair.
We're talking race relations here on Up to Date, and we've got Dan from Kansas City, Missouri on the line. Dan?
Hello. I live in Volcker neighborhood, a midtown neighborhood, and not too long ago, less than 2 years ago, just walked down to the neighborhood Quick Trip to get some ice, since my ice machine was broken in my refrigerator. Was walking up the street, I saw a police officer cruiser come down my street, watched him as he sped by when I crossed the street, went to Quick Trip, got my ice, and on the way back to my house, three different police vehicles, one of them that pulled up on the sidewalk, stopped me, eventually handcuffing me, asking for my ID, et cetera, et cetera. Luckily, this happened. I feel luckily it happened on Westport Road, where I felt emboldened enough to start yelling and asking what the reason was that they had pulled me over or stopped me. As I said, I was walking. I was never given a reason. I was never apologized to. When I said to the main officer that it had happened because I was black, he responded nothing. I filed a report with Internal Affairs. They said that there was no reason to believe they had done any wrongdoing. And surprisingly, not surprisingly probably to most black people, but probably to you, I kind of expected that outcome from the Internal Affairs investigation. The disrespect and the second-class citizen status that's conferred upon black people is rampant, and I'm in a way, I guess, thankful that this event has happened to bring it to light to many people who actually never had reason or introspection enough to actually think about that situation. The president himself is disrespected, and many people accept the disrespect that is given to the president, mainly because he's black and because that's our history of accepting disrespect towards black people, is my opinion.
It's unfortunate what you had to endure, and I'm very sorry for that. But many black people all over this country, particularly in areas that are going through transitions, have to deal with this same kind of stuff. And it forces us to always do the calculus of whether to invest the energy and the time to seek justice when an injustice was done to us, or just let it go. And so often, so many of us, and I'm guilty too, just let it go.
I agree completely. I'm a first generation American in my family, and I remember, and I learned English watching Sesame Street, and I Electric Company and all that. And I remember the song that sang the preamble to the Constitution, and learning English as a second language and learning those words when I was a kid, it stuck in my head that all men are created equal. So I fight every time that I get a chance to make sure that that is the history that's going to be going forward for black people and other people like me. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, thanks for saying it with us, Dan. Appreciate it. Next up on the line here, Jack from KCMO. You're on Up to Date.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think something that hasn't been mentioned, at least to the best of my knowledge, is the fact this all took place in a gated community. And by that, I'm saying there's a kind of contrived environment within a gated community where people have a certain expectation of not having to be bothered or having to deal with the wrong kind of people. And by that, I'm saying people who don't have the affluence to live within this community. Now, down in Florida, they're very common, as well as up here in Kansas City, you have a lot of them. And I'm just simply saying that what occurred in that gated community more than likely would never have occurred outside of one.
Do our guests agree with that?
I'm not so sure. Florida has a terrible, ragged history of mistreatment of African Americans. And, I watched on television some of the news programs that showed the so-called gated community didn't look any different from what we have here in the Kansas City area, where there might be African Americans who are living in or near those communities who might be treated or viewed as suspects. And I don't want to pass it off as Trayvon Martin was in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was an American. He had every right to be able to walk in an area to go to the store to get Skittles or an iced tea just like anyone else.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, not just sort of implying that there was some sort of just random circumstantial scenario that happened there. I mean, it was a little bit more than that. He was profiled, he was stalked, and he was attacked, and he died. I mean, where it happened, I think, is somewhat tangential to the overall point, which is that, you know, that kind of thing is not acceptable in America, inside gated communities or outside.
Well, I agree. What I'm trying to say is that the prior caller was talking about it, something he had happened down in Westport. Do you honestly think somebody could profile somebody and shoot somebody on the idea that they're not supposed to be in the neighborhood down there or any other neighborhood?
Well, it seems incredulous to you, but to me, yes, I do.
Yeah, it seems like there's the heart of the matter. People who've lived this may have a very different feeling.
Here's something that we really need to focus on with this conversation, and it's from a new report by the Foundation for Childhood Development. I just wrote about that this morning in a blog. It says that by 2018, that's just 5 years from now, fewer than half of the children in the United States will be white. By 2043, white people will no longer be the majority. So we have to get our arms around this whole changing demographics of America so that people can function, feel welcomed, give their best productive efforts for this country to remain globally competitive.
Thank you for your call, Jack. We're going to take one more before we go to a break. Mike in Baldwin City, welcome to Up to Date.
Thanks. As a mixed Native American who grew up in Mississippi and Louisiana in the 1970s and saw the end of the Klan down there, when I heard this ruling last Saturday night, my head about exploded. Because it just you get this feeling that other people can decide that you don't belong in a neighborhood when, as an American, even though people have to realize ethnic differences, you should be able to go wherever you want to, even though in some parts of the South, you just don't for your own safety. It shows how far this country has to come, and it's kind of hard for me to put my head around in 2013, but hopefully the world changes. Thanks.
You are right to wish for hope, but I think that we have to do more than wish for hope. We have to be actively engaged. I'm not surprised that people still harbor this belief. Again, it's part of the history that the president spoke about in his address, but it's also part of our media. Our media continue to put out this image of African-American males as scary individuals, and that has to change from one that is more true to life.
Clinton?
I totally agree. I mean, the views, the way that African-American males are portrayed is either highly sexualized, highly criminalized, or somewhat uneducated. And those three things, I think, play into the way people, subconsciously or not, view most black males that they see on the street, in professional circumstances, and all over the place. And that plays in largely to how people interact.
All right. Well, thank you, Clinton. And I think the conversation moving along very well. Lots more to say. We're going to take a break, though. And when we continue, we'll have our guests and you, our listeners. We've got Chris Susan still to talk to on the line. And later in the hour, Brian McTavish even comes on with our weekend to-do list. I'm Randy Mason, in for Steve Kraske, and you are listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Randy Mason. Steve Kraske will return to the chair on Monday. If you missed yesterday's conversation about the effects of summer heat on our bodies, our grass, trees, and our air, you can find it, as well as our look back on the pine tar game, at kcur.org. We are talking this hour, though, about race, racial profiling, and President Obama's comments on the verdict in the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case. You can still join the conversation. Our number is 816-235-2888, 816-235-2888. You can also email us at uptodate@kcur.org. You can post on KCUR's Facebook page if you like as well. We've got Louis Duguid, columnist for the Kansas City Star, here in the studio. Good to have him.
It's good to be here.
And good to have Clinton Yates from the Washington Post also online. I wondered what you guys thought about Stevie Wonder and his decision here to not play in states with Stand Your Ground laws. Does that actually get people's attention in a positive way?
I applaud what Stevie Wonder did, written about it. I think that more people should do the same. I think that we need to vote with our dollars, and our dollars really speak more loudly than mere words.
Yeah, Stevie Wonder, I mean, that's fine. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. To me, that's sort of a very old-school way of going about it, although not insignificant. One of the things I wanted to point people toward, though, is a Tumblr site called IamNotTrayvonMartin.tumblr.com. And what it is a collection of stories of people who are admitting the privilege that they live with that is not that of Trayvon Martin. And a lot of people don't understand that the basic everyday things that they consider to be random freedoms or creativities or what have you are some of the things that many people feel that they are simply not capable of doing because of the way our system holds people back. I would implore people to go check out that site and see some of the regular stories of non-African-Americans and non-people of color stating why they know they're on the other side of what is basically a faulted system.
Well, let's listen in then with our next caller here. Susan from Independence.
Hi.
You're on Up to Date.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Be sure and say that website again, because that's what I want to promote, is talking with people. As a faith, it's just been so frustrating to me that so many of my friends had no idea about, quote, the talk. And so I just feel like we need to be talking with each other so that we understand better what it feels like to be black. One of the things that kind of makes me concerned, some of you may remember the old experiment that a woman, I think, in Illinois or Indiana did with her class of, like, first or second graders when she had them be prejudiced against the blue-eyed kids. Mm-hmm.
That was Jane Elliott in Iowa, and she did that with her third grade class.
Okay, and the thing that frightened me the most was after one day of living that way in the class, then they switched, and the brown-eyed kids were the good ones, and the blue-eyed kids were the bad ones. And everybody accommodated to that so horribly in that they still treated each other so badly. And so I think we got to get over this in a way. We have to be talking about it and finding out how do you walk in somebody else's shoes, because it is going to switch. And if we're not good at that, if we're not listening to each other, it's going to be so hard, because it will be difficult to understand. And so I just want so much for people to talk with each other and say, what is it like? I had a good friend said that she didn't understand it until she went into a restaurant with a black friend, and he happened to be her boss. And so when they went up to pay, the guy just looked at her to pay. And it was like he didn't even think the black guy could pay for the lunch. And she said it was so disarming that he was treated so clearly, so poorly, just because of the color of his skin, that she said everybody should have somebody be a person of color who is their boss, so that they can feel the difference of what that's like when there's an understanding there that you're not put down and you're not expected not to, to cooperate. So thank you for listening, and I just encourage people to listen.
Good thoughts there, Susan. And let's repeat that website while we have the chance here, Clint.
I'm fairly certain it's iamnottrayvonmartin.tumblr.com. Tumblr is T-U-M-B-L-R.com. And it's, you know, like I said, it's a collection of people that are, that are outing their own privilege. And I think that's a necessary exercise, because a lot of people don't want to admit, because it's difficult to, it's difficult to talk about the things that bother you if you consider yourself a good person. And you don't want to say, wow, I didn't realize that, you know, you don't want to associate yourself with what you believe to be racism if you consider yourself to be a good person. But a lot of times it's the just sort of looking by while things happen and not being a part of the solution that creates just as many problems.
Can I make one more comment?
Yes,
sir. Yeah. May I make one more comment?
Yes.
I was privileged to have a black pastor, associate pastor at my church, and he was an Army brat. So we all talked freely about him being a Oreo cookie, because he felt like he was white. He was black on the outside, but he's white on the inside. I never had a problem with that until I realized what that means is white is better. White is good. That's the criteria that you go by. And he just happened to be unlucky and be black on the outside. I was mortified when I realized what that really means when you say that about someone. You're really saying that there is this criteria or standard that's the best, and this poor person happened. You know, when you hear it that way, it's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that's what I was saying.
Well, I wouldn't.
So that's one of those examples of white privilege that we need to be more aware of what we're doing and how we're doing it. Yeah.
Privilege is real, but I wouldn't characterize the individual as being that poor person because he's African-American. As a matter of fact, I would see it as being just as good as anyone else. He just brings a different view to the table, and we need to accept that view and honor that view and welcome that view.
Yeah, and I want to get to another point, which is that I don't think that white people need to be concerned about understanding racism for the purposes of self-protection. People of all races should be concerned about it for the purposes of human compassion.
Well, and beyond compassion, I think that once we get past the issue of race, we can find that these are individuals who have a lot to contribute to America, and we simply need to tap that rich vein. And we haven't done that. We live in tremendously segregated societies now. As a matter of fact, just as segregated as they were when Dr. King was alive. And the Jane Elliott experiment with her third grade class actually started with King's death. She wanted her students to understand why someone would kill King and why certain people in this country were being treated differently. We have not gotten past that yet. And we need to have these conversations, just as Eric Holder, the Attorney General, addressed the NAACP at its annual convention in Florida.
Well, obviously, we're talking about a very important topic here. It's race relations, and we're getting emails as well as calls. But if you want to get in on the conversation, 816-235-2888, 816-235-2888 puts you into the phone lines here at Up to Date. But an email came in from Gabby, who says, since the verdict, I have tried to reach out to African Americans to tell them I'm sorry, and that so many white Americans do not agree with the verdict and are not racist. Yeah, I've been told more than once that I am white and part of the problem. I've also been called racist names by African Americans in the past. We all need to discuss this openly and stop being racist towards each other. So email us, also another way to get in on the conversation. But right now we've got Chris from Eudora. Chris, welcome to Up to Date.
Thanks for taking my call.
What are you thinking here, Chris?
Well, when I was younger, I used to wonder what my black friends were talking about, what any black person was talking about, you know, the profiling and things that they said were going on. And then I went and lived in Japan for 5 years. And my wife is Japanese, and my coworkers are Japanese. And the things the president was talking about were happening to me. They were part of my daily life. I mean, at the bus stop, women grabbing their children and telling them it was dangerous when I would come by. And I would tell this to my wife and my coworkers, and they would come up with all kinds of excuses to say that what I felt was happening wasn't happening. And so I think the president's comments are the single greatest thing he's done in his presidency. I think white people need to wake up and see what's going on. And since I've come back to the States, I see it too, because I've been through it. And I just think it's incredible that people will tell me I'm not a racist, and then I'll see them do these things. And it's just time for everyone to wake up, and I really appreciate what the president said. I hope it contributes to people waking up and seeing what's going on, and I'll take the rest off the air. Thank you very much.
That's a great perspective you bring, Chris.
I think people are awakening, and the president talked about his daughter's friends being more open and honest and not letting race get in the way, and I think that's good. However, we have this ragged problem that really is multi-generational, and it won't go away. If there's any doubt, just look at Facebook or some of these other social media sites. They are filled with this. When the president addressed the nation after the December 14 Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, that tragedy, he had his address break into an NFL football game. Facebook just got stupid with people making the most offensive racist comments imaginable about the president of the United States.
Yeah, I agree with that caller. I mean, I wrote that in a column. I said I think it's the most important thing he said since his time in office, because if nothing else, it simply legitimizes what a lot of people have not been willing to talk about for decades.
But you got some responses on that column, too, did you not, that really bent your ear?
Yeah, I got a couple. I got a couple voicemails. One from a woman who was from Maryland, who basically talked about the fact that she felt a lot of the guilt and wanted to do something to change it. She felt that the country owed young black men something, such as a free education, in order to make up for the consistent abuse that they have been undergoing. I got another one from a woman in Florida who basically told me to go back to Africa, along with all the other black people that I know. So that just gives you an idea of, you know, where we're at in this country. There are still people who believe things, such archaic notions, that people need to get on boats and go back to another continent. It's just it's stunning what you really reveal when you peel back a layer.
We did just get this email from Daryl I'd like to share. Said, the majority of the voices that I hear expressing pain over the verdict are African Americans. More diversity of voices is needed to weigh in on this in support of the Martin family. Yes, it is an American issue, but the voice of an African American issue, but the voice of America is needed at this time. So word coming to us from email, and also here on the line, we've got Rick from Kansas City, Missouri. Rick, welcome to Diddy.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having this conversation. I'm glad the president spoke to it, and I don't think speaking to race is racism. I don't think speaking to divisive issues is divisive. I think when those issues come up, the president certainly didn't make this a national issue. It became one. And that's one of the things that any president is supposed to do. And this president in particular has probably spoke less about race than other presidents who obviously have all been white. Just for that reason, he didn't, you know, it's been said that he doesn't want to be seen as a black president or a white president or a president of black America, but of all America. But he's spoke even less about it than I think previous presidents have. So I'm glad that he did, and I disagree with the early caller that said that, you know, we're all one America. We have issues, obviously, of racism and divisiveness, not just between races, but between other groups. And racism really brings out the worst side of humanity in, you know, having somebody to look down on. It's happened for hundreds of years, thousands of years between different ethnic cultures, and it's conversation we have to continue to have and talk about it. And I'm also glad to hear someone like Stevie Wonder, you know, is not going to do concerts in places that have those stand their ground laws, because I would like to see economic, you know, pressure put on states that do that. It's not the same same caliber, but that's part of what ended apartheid was economic pressure and dollars. And I would only be one voice if I wrote a letter to Florida to say I'm not coming, but I'm not coming until they change that because I don't want to go there. But thank you for this conversation.
Well, thank you, Rick. You folks here have some opportunities to, in these last couple of minutes, you know, just remind people of the importance of this. So let's take a shot.
From the African American perspective, I think that it's important to see this through the lens of history. For black people, and especially in the social media, they've equated Trayvon Martin's death to Emmett Till's death. Emmett Till was killed at a time when African Americans were part of the great migration from the South to the North, and part of that migration was fueled by escaping the terrorism that was taking place in the South against African Americans. And they saw what happened to Emmett Till as something that could happen to them, especially with the open casket. And people are looking at Trayvon Martin as being very similar. They see what happened to Trayvon as something that could happen to them or their sons.
Yeah, the immediacy seems to be very, very palpable right now. Clinton, we're about to wrap up here. What are your thoughts on this? As we've had a pretty good conversation, haven't we?
Yeah, and I just want to thank you guys for that. You know, quick personal note, my mother grew up in Kansas City. She went to Paseo High, and her mother lived there for years. And she said back when she was in school, you know, young black girls were steered towards different career paths than young white women. And she eventually broke out of that mold and took it out. So I just want to say that even though I'm here in D.C., I understand that in different parts of the country, things are in different places in terms of where we are in this discussion. I really want to say thank you for having this discussion where you are in this country, because I think it's important all over the nation.
Yeah, talking about divisive issues, not necessarily divisive. So we do thank Louis Duguid, a columnist for the Kansas City Star. Appreciate your being here.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
And from afternoon in Washington, Clinton Yates at the Washington Post, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.